Hello, and welcome to episode 25 of Modern Media Review. I'm Robin Gibson.
And I'm Sean Golligley.
And this time we're going to be talking about the movie Yesterday. It's a film you probably know about. The world wakes up after some sort of worldwide minor power outage.
Well, no, it's more than a minor power outage. It's the whole world for a start, and it's a phenomenon, Robin.
Okay, I wake up after a phenomenon, and it turns out the Beatles have never existed, and for some reason, neither has Coca-Cola or cigarettes, which is a bit of a weird one. And then some complete charlatan, stone-cold loser, untalented acoustics drummer, makes himself into a big star by claiming he wrote their songs and performing them. What a tosser. Is this meant to be a sympathetic character?
Well, he is one of these typical Richard Curtis characters, you know, quite lovable in a bumbling sort of like...
But he's a total con man. He cons his friends, he cons the record industry.
He does, that's true. But, you know, he
claims he wrote Eleanor Rigby. It's appalling. Anyway, this guy's missed this minor phenomenal worldwide wipeout by being... He's been in some sort of also equally minor bicycle accident where he loses his two front teeth, but he remembers the Beatles.
Well, there is a bit of a spoiler alert here because...
I wouldn't worry about that.
He's lost his two front teeth through the accident. I actually wished he'd lost his two front teeth via a confrontation with John Lennon later in the film, where Lennon would just said, "You're a thieving bastard," and whacked him in the mouth, you know?
That would have been perfectly fitting. But anyway, if we get on to John Lennon, we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves, aren't we? He only appears at the end. I was actually looking forward to the film.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, our North American correspondent, Anglophile Ben Diamond, had written quite lovingly of it. And then Mark Kermode, who's normally an excellent film reviewer, raved about it on telly the other night. I thought, I've got to go and see this. But I'm wondering if Kermode himself was in a minor bicycle accident and getting knocked out after half an hour of the film, because after the first half hour, which is mildly amusing, it's just a sort of bad rom-com, isn't it? And I mean, I like the worst of them, but this is so flabby. And you're talking to a guy who watches Made in Manhattan whenever it's on telly, you know?
Well, I wish Kermode had lost two front teeth in his bike accident for making me go and watch this. And
he wasn't actually in a bike accident. But...
Well, I wish he had been and lost his two front teeth, because I paid 16 quid to watch this drivel.
16? It was only £9 in Paisley, mate.
Well, yeah, exactly. This is your London prices, isn't it?
Anyway, it was like so bland. I feel like, should we even be reviewing it? We don't usually do bland stuff. I mean, we did do Love Island, didn't we? But this makes this makes Love Island look like sort of Martin Scorsese masterpiece.
Well, it's a typical... You get what you buy, really, don't you? It's Richard Curtis. What are you expecting, Robin? I mean, we've had, you know, Four Weddings, Notting Hill, Love Actually. What did you expect?
The problem is I haven't seen any of them. I only went to see this because of Danny Boyle, who directed it. It seems to be sort of dipping below his normal quality level.
Well, if you think about it, it must have been a no-brainer when they were doing the sort of, like, pitch for it, because you've got Karaoke Beatles, Danny Boyle and Richard Curtis. I mean, it's got to be a hit, hasn't it?
Well, it is a hit, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I guess I associate... Maybe it ages me a bit, but I associate Curtis with Blackadder.
Okay.
So I'm thinking of these guys sold out. But then again, I'm thinking, who doesn't sell out?
Well, I wish we could.
Well, we can't sell out. No one wants to buy into us.
But this whole thing, this mining, this rich vein of nostalgia, I mean, it's a money spinner, isn't it? Because just never mind... Yesterday, we've had Bohemian Rhapsody, we've got this Springsteen film, Blinded by the Light, which is coming out. We've had Rocket Man, which was another karaoke film.
Did you see that?
Yeah, we reviewed it, mate, don't you remember?
No, we didn't review Rocket Man, Ben did. Did you see the film?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Was it good?
No.
Oh. Well, how was the audience? I mean, when I went to see Yesterday, it was just all old people. I felt like I'd been conned into going along to some sort of aging person's jukebox musical event. And I'd never go to the theatre to see, you know, We Will Rock You or anything like that. Well, I mean, do people actually like this stuff?
Funny you should say that, because the demographic of where I was watching it was very similar, apart from one young couple who was sitting at about three or four stalls up from us, who must have thought they were there to see the Toy Story 4 or Spider-Man. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't for Yesterday.
There's an interesting point here, actually, because this is a film about... When they used to bring out pop music films, the original generation of pop music, the audience was young. I remember going to see Slade in Flame, matinee performance when I was about 10 or 11 years old. And it was full of shouting, fighting kids. A memorable moment during that screening was when I get hit in the back of the head by a golf ball that had been flung from the back row. That's what a music film should be like, but this was like a Darby and Joan club.
Well, I'll tell you what would have been cheaper. If you really want karaoke, and especially Beatles karaoke, because it's of that age, just go to your local old people's home. I guarantee you, any afternoon, they'll have Yesterday on relentlessly. And the thing is, you can just play it ad nauseum because they've all got Alzheimer's and they can't remember that it's been played 5 minutes before, and they'll all be singing along to it quite happily.
But have they got on to the Beatles? Aren't they still on, you know, Glenn Miller and
Inkspots,
Vera Lynn and things like that?
Yeah, no, I think they're on the Beatles now, eh?
Beatles is a hell of a long time ago now, isn't it? I mean, the 2060s are closer than the 1960s, and yet people are still obsessed with it.
Yeah, exactly. And the point is that the Apple Corps must have been so happy about this, because what a timely boost for the back catalogue.
Well, of course, because they're running out of anniversaries, aren't they? I mean, yeah. 50th anniversary of 69 this year, is it? Is that right?
Well, about 150th, isn't it?
So I'll bet the Beatles were only too happy to approve this. On the other hand, right, I thought it would be good to hear the songs done by some crap busker, because I don't really like the Beatles. It's like that quote from Mark Twain, which probably isn't from Mark Twain, because none of them are. He always gets the credit for it. Wagner's music is better than it sounds. Now, to me, that's a quintessential one-line review of anything. I do get that. I mean, I understand that, although I don't really like the Beatles and I find them a bit lame, that they are good and they have some intrinsic value. So I was sort of...
That's very big of you, Robin.
It's okay. I quite enjoyed the performances, actually, of the songs. Although they didn't do any of the weird stuff, did they? They just did the obvious pop song jingly ones and then the sort of Sgt. Pepper-style ones. And then I thought, would people, this is set in the modern day, I thought, would people really be knocked out by these songs now?
Well, they're knocked out by Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, and one of your pet hates George Ezra, aren't they? So I suppose this stuff would be like a revelation to them. But it is quite old-fashioned music. And it does make you concerned about the whole absolutely impossible to figure out concept of the movie, because Ed Sheeran wouldn't be Ed Sheeran without the Beatles anyway, would he? He's definitely influenced by them.
I think he's influenced by everyone, doesn't he? Rob off the lot.
I've got a lot of time for Ed, but we won't go into that. I remember from his early days on the grime scene, which is where he introduced himself. The thing is, as a
He was actually, in fairness to Ed Sheeran, because as soon as he popped up on the screen, I thought, oh my God, here we go, you know? Game of Thrones, this is the latest little thing that he's wedged himself into. But in fairness, he's quite self-deprecating, and he has some of the funnier parts of the films, like...
That's not saying a lot.
It's not saying a lot, but his ringtone is Shape of You, which I thought was quite funny.
That was great funny, yeah.
And, you know, when he says, when the guy is nicking Hey Jude, and he's giving him some advice and saying maybe it should be Hey Dude.
Well, yeah, and the bloke changed it. This is the thing. As a film about a charlatan artist... There was one gag in it that just made me think immediately of, this has gone back a long way, but one of my favourite comic actors, Tony Hancock, his film The Rebel, where he played a bad artist in Paris, and he got mistaken for a good artist with someone else's pictures, and then at his big exhibition he tried to slip some of his own crap stuff in, and of course it got bombed out. And this is what happened here when Jack Malik tries to slip one of his own rubbish songs at the end of a session recording Beatles songs, and they all just laugh at it and say it's rubbish.
Well, that was the Summer Song, which was his favourite, or not his favourite, his mate's favourite, which, is another thing that annoys me about these Curtis films. They're so formulaic. We've got the sort of Hugh Grant character, who's Jack Malik, yeah? The only difference is we've suddenly decided to decamp to Suffolk instead of some part of London. He's got this bumbling group of supporting friends. We're all the same. We've had Tom with the dog in Four Weddings. We had Rhys Ivins in Notting Hill. We've had all these sort of like English Rose actresses. And we've got sort of like, I mean, what's her name? Ben's in love, our American correspondent. Ben's in love with these sort of genre of women.
Oh, these English women, like Felicity Kendall types.
Well, yeah, we've got Lily Jones is in there, English Rose. I mean, she looked like a poor man's sort of like Keira Knightley to me, do you know what I mean? And there was no chemistry between the pair of them either.
Well, there was that great review in The Sun, and I think it is worth giving The Sun's film reviewer a name check, and he's called Jamie East, because he wrote a great line about the lack of chemistry between the two stars, and he said, I've seen more chemistry between Jeremy Corbyn and Katie Hopkins, which I thought was absolutely true when I saw the film.
Well, the other thing was you could close your eyes, and the dialogue is so similar as well. You could close your eyes and see Emma Thompson in Love Actually, or, you know, when they have that ridiculous scene where they're these star-crossed lovers who have got so much much chemistry. They've been mates for 10 years and never laid a paw on each other. Yeah. And she stands in front of him saying, oh, you know, this is... She's just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her. That whole shtick from Notting Hill. It was virtually a repeat of that. I mean, what's going on here?
Well, I drifted off after the first half hour because nothing was happening, you know, and it was the dialogue, if you want to call it that. I'm perfectly willing to believe it was just the same as the other films because it was absolutely wooden. Were there any good jokes in the film?
Not many.
Well, the Oasis joke was good where it turned out after the Beatles, and it still bugs me, the Beatles cigarettes and Coca-Cola had all disappeared. That it turned out that the only other thing that had disappeared was Oasis. That was funny.
Well, humour had disappeared, obviously, because there was no humour in it.
And then about an hour later, Ed Sheeran's phone rang with Shape of You. I think they forgot to write any jokes in between. And what about this whole premise that all these skint people spend all their time in the pub before he's famous?
Absolutely ridiculous. They're all there necking down the beers at a rate of knots, yeah? Well, there's no Wetherspoons out where they were there?
Well, they weren't in a Wetherspoons. I suppose it's a bit cheaper out there in sort of a Brexit land.
Well, yeah, which is... I mean, I quite often drink in Wetherspoons, obviously, because it's cheap. But the only problem is you have to sit there and read all the Brexit literature as well.
I didn't know they had Brexit literature.
Oh, massively, on every table, man.
Oh, well, I won't be reading any of that next time in my Wetherspoons. Anyway, I thought it was a bit thin, you know, and I thought some of the characters were good. The woman who played the mat, the sort of devious, power-crazed manager, was good until it just turned into a bit of farce, you know.
Well, put it this way, she wasn't Ari Gold from Entourage, was she?
You've lost me there, mate.
Well, he was a super agent in the show Entourage. You should check it out, because if you want to see a ranting, maniac agent stroke manager, he is the archetype for it.
I'll check this out, because she was only one step removed from a kind of pantomime villain, wasn't she?
Yeah, there was no depth to any of the characters, really, was there? Were they likeable, even?
No one was likeable. No one. I didn't like a single person in it.
I certainly didn't like the new John Lennon in it, either.
No.
Or the old John Lennon.
Well, I don't really like the old John Lennon. As I always say, if Twitter had been around when Lennon was alive, you'd have soon found out what a twat he was.
That's shocking. He's a national treasure, mate.
Yeah, I know. And all the...
I'll tell you what really annoyed me, though, about this whole thing where everyone's forgotten about the Beatles, apart from this stone-cold loser charlatan who rewrites all the Beatles songs, or karaoke's them, really. There's one guy in Russia. Why is that a Ed Sheeran gig? I have no idea. He's a middle-aged guy with a beard, looks a bit rough, but apparently he's at an Ed Sheeran gig.
Good question, because all the rest of the audience were young teenage fans, weren't they?
All with their heart emojis making this go viral, yeah?
Yeah.
Apart from this one old guy who's looking there stunned, actually remembering back in the USSR when it was a hit. What's all that about? And then that nice woman from Coronation Street who's at the press conference.
Sarah Lancashire, I know her name. I'm not very good with actors.
Okay, well, she's saying she's not an actor, mate.
No, she is an actor, but she's one of the ones whose names I knew.
Okay, because you're a Corrie fan, yeah? Okay. Well, she's at a press conference, and she's one of the three people in the world that actually remember the Beatles. Mm. And she's holding up a bloody yellow submarine. Now, if the Beatles had never been remembered, or had never existed...
Well, the point is they never existed.
Well, then no one would be making a yellow submarine for her to hold up, would they?
Toy yellow submarines, yeah, exactly. This is the problem. What actually happened in this film? No one really tries to explain it. I mean, I guess you're just meant to take it as a fantasy, but obviously I don't know that much about time shift quantum physics and universal memory loss fields and stuff, but I can sort of get that the digital records had all been wiped out and no one had... And I can get that people's memory was wiped out. But how come when he went and looked in his cupboard for his Beatles albums on vinyl, had they all gone missing? And yet the yellow submarine still existed.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
That's continuity gone mad, mate.
This was just box ticking, wasn't it? Because it's like, you know, you've all seen Sliding Doors, Goodnight Sweetheart, you know, Back to the Future. I mean, it's not a theme that's been unexplored.
Wait a minute, Goodnight Sweetheart was actually perfectly plausible.
What, going back in time?
Yeah, because he went through a door and then he was in a completely different time.
Okay.
If you believe in time, space, whatever it is, then that's a lot more plausible than this.
Okay.
He should have gone through a door.
And that would have made the film perfect for you, Robert.
Yeah.
This is what they should have done at the production meetings, you know. Never mind him crashing his bike into a bus during some worldwide power outage phenomenon. Should have just wandered through his front door into someone else's time zone, yeah?
Yeah, like Mr. Ben. The other thing that bugged me was that there was this thing about cigarettes. No one had heard of cigarettes, right? And then at the end, he gets given the address to go and find one of the Beatles who turns out to be John Lennon.
Yeah, well, I've got a bone to pick with them about this as well.
Wait a minute. What I was hoping was that it would be George Harrison, because cigarettes had never existed. He hadn't started smoking and he hadn't died of lung cancer. That was an obvious gag. Although, given that people thought dredging up Lennon as a country-dwelling artist was in bad taste, then dredging up George as a still alive non-smoker might have been an even worse taste.
Oh, I'd have been straight on Twitter moaning about that. But no, I thought it was going to be, because they did this big sort of like panoramic view of the sea, and they were going over all this sort of like, looked like free-range farming, didn't it? And I thought, well, this has got to be McCartney, hasn't it? Him and the missus, he somehow met Linda McCartney, and they've done their sort of like free range.
Wings would never have existed either, though, would they?
No loss there, mate.
No, what would it give Ireland back to the Irish? Mary Had a Little Lamb. These were some great tracks.
Well, at least we would have been spared the frog chorus and Say, Say, Say with Michael Jackson.
Well, this is what I'm not sure. No one was spared anything. And yet, and then when these two characters who remembered it found him, it was a bit lame, because instead of exposing him, they just congratulated him.
Well, again, we had this sort of like toe-curling moment where he makes his sort of like play for the lady right at the end. Another spoiler here.
Yeah, and he admits to the audience that he's...
Yeah, and they start off, well, it's typically British, isn't it? They start off booing and all the rest of it. And then as soon as he says, oh, but I really love you. Whatever her name was. What was her name, his girlfriend in that? Ellie. I really love you, Ellie. And then everyone warms to him and cheers him, and they all live happily ever after. What a farce. He should have been ripped asunder.
Well, here I say, like another of these supposedly feel-good movies, It's a Wonderful Life, which no one
That is a feel-good movie.
It's not. It's a terrible indictment of society and how you can never escape from the drudgery of your life. That's how I see it, anyway. This movie's got a dark heart, mate. This movie's saying something about Britain at the moment. It's like Brexit, right? We like being conned by a bunch of charlatans, and then when we find them out and suss it all out, we don't even do anything about it.
Well, we've got a Hugh Grant character in trying to get into number 10 at the moment, this bumbling, buffoonish sort of character, except he has no redeeming features.
He's already been found out, and no one's trying to do anything about it. They're just going to let it happen. There'll never be a revolution.
That is true. But the point is, you're right about this film having a dark heart, which is weird, really, as it's a rom-com.
Well, it's obviously unplanned. I can't imagine Richard Curtis sitting down to write something with a dark heart.
Well, I think he's tapped into this, and this was the demographic, as far as I could see, of the audience, is a series of what-ifs. You get to a certain stage in your life and you start thinking, oh, what if I'd done this, what if I hadn't done this, and all the rest of it. And it's just appealing to people who suddenly wake up when they're in their sort of like mid-40s and realise that life is a pile of shit and things haven't worked out. You know, you've totally failed, and it's not going to get any better. And you can take solace in ridiculous films like this.
So you can go to the pictures, yeah.
Exactly. And just...
So it's not much different from any other movie, is it?
Well, I guess.
Anyway, it did put a few thoughts in my head. I mean, I don't think we need to say much more about the film. Let's face it, there's nothing more to say about it, apart from the fact that they could have edited out the middle hour and left it at about 45 minutes, I think.
Or, as I said before, just go down to your local old people's home and film them singing Beatles karaoke.
Yeah, exactly. But it did make me wonder who I could live with without ever having existed. What about you?
Oh, for me, I mean, I could quite happily live without George Ezra, but I mean, that's a minor one really, isn't it?
Well, the thing about the Beatles is that they're ubiquitous and they're supposedly important. That's why it was supposedly leaves a big gap. So George Ezra doesn't really fit the bill. See, someone for me that fits the bill with that I could easily live without is David Bowie.
Whoa, hold on.
Well, at least the Beatles are original, mate. I mean, I might not like them, but Sgt. Pepper might be a bit lame, but sort of twee, but at least it hadn't been done before. I mean, Bowie nicked his mad, kooky cast of characters from The Who, is poncing about from Anthony Newley and Marcel, and his supposedly shocking androgyny from Lou Reed and Iggy Pop. Then after he'd nicked all that, had a bit of good run in the 70s with it, he couldn't get himself arrested by the tastemakers until he died. Then he was sanctified. Obviously only from the 70s. No one would miss him.
Well, after he'd done Let's Dance, I mean, he died a sort of artistic death, didn't he?
Couldn't give the tickets away, mate.
That's very shocking, Robin. I mean, you know, I mean, for you, really, you'd be quite happy if there were no Beatles, I think.
It wouldn't bother me.
Well, on that uplifting note.
Yeah, we better say goodnight. But we better do a bit of plugging first, hadn't we?
Plug away, mate.
Yes, yes. All the podcasts, all
share
on YouTube.
Share off the homepage, by the way. Isn't that what we were saying the other day?
Oh, it'd be nice if you shared our YouTube pages, yeah. We're on YouTube, all the podcasts. We've got our website, modernmediareview.com. We're on Spotify, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, as you might know it. And even Google Podcasts, because they just sneak you in.
Really? I didn't know they did that.
You're just on there.
Bloody hell.
Everything you do is on Google, mate. We discussed this the last time.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
And next time, we'll do something else.
We will do something else. Maybe we'll do yesterday again. There'll be some worldwide memory loss phenomenon. We'll just redo this one.
Isn't it a fact that in Groundhog Day, the first thing the guy did when he woke up was went to see a doctor?
I can't remember, weirdly.
This bloke's just carried on as if it's perfectly normal for him to remember the Beatles. Yeah, so we'll do yesterday again.
Okay.
Excellent. And we'll see you then. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
And good night. Goodbye. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.